Welcome to the CodeCast Podcast. Real-world insights for your daily medical coding and billing processes. And now, here's your host, Terry Fletcher.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the CodeCast Podcast. My name is Terry Fletcher, and today we are in episode 38, and our topic is best practice tips for collecting patient payments. And so I really want to jump into the state of patient balance collections. And it's not a positive, it's kind of a negative, but I'm going to make it a positive for you, hopefully. I want to give you some statistical information and just have a discussion about where we're at right now. I've teased this topic over the last couple of weeks, and so now I really want to bring it home for you and make sure you realize, you know, where it is as far as your percentage of income and what you need to do to make sure that you're capturing those dollars. But before we dive into today's topic, the CodeCast Podcast is brought to you by Healthcare Executive. Healthcare Executives Network is the fastest growing community for healthcare executives and their trusted partners. HealthcareExecutivesNetwork.org. And Better Living. Since 2002, Better Living has been the premier digital lifestyle brand dedicated to travel, food, health, home, and more on BetterLiving.com. So what we want to do when we really dive into this is that I want to give you some information that I think actually might shock you when you look at the big picture. So private practices are now amongst the largest unsecured credit grantors in the country. And how did we get to this point? I mean, as the money from insurance companies decreases, patient portions have increased. Just think of ACA, which to me is kind of a misnomer for the Affordable Care Act, because patients' high deductibles and copays, I've seen them as high as $15,000 for a deductible, have just increased. Just, it's amazing to me why what percentage. And as a result, both patient liability and bad debt are on the rise, and healthcare providers are experiencing unprecedented revenue and margin pressure. So this may not be the patient's fault in many cases, only because the patient does not know that they owe anything more than at the time of service than their copay, because that's usually what's asked to be collected. And most practices in my travels, we've had to create them, don't have policies or office procedures in place to facilitate payments against a payment against an outstanding patient balance. They know what to do against the insurance company, but the patient balance just hasn't been really facilitated well. Among those that do, they're not often enforced. And then you've got multiple physician practices that want to do their own thing. And so it's no wonder that the private practices are feeling the financial squeeze for the patient portion that has grown to represent 23% of practice revenue, according to an InstaMed study from 2012. They did a trends in healthcare payment study, and it was amazing to me that what once used to be about I think 16% a few years back, now has jumped that much. The same study stated patient portion has been growing by 5 to 6% per year. And so getting control over the patient portion is an important focus for any private practice. Another interesting statistic is paying the physician bill is a low priority for the average person. So in October 2013, AdvancedMD funded a survey that asked 100 random participants to rate the priority of their bills. The goal of the survey was to determine which bills are paid first, and medical bills ranked number 8 out of 10 behind food, utilities, car payments, cigarettes, cell phones, and cable. So when the front office behavior enables a patient to walk out the door before asking for a payment against an outstanding balance, the chances of collecting that money significantly diminishes. On the average, practice spends, they send about 3.3 statements before receiving a payment because patients ignore them. They're like, oh, well, they're not going to do anything to me. The average cost of printing, handling, and stamping a statement is $1.25 if you do it manually. And this is every time, and that's going based on every time the U.S. Postal Service raises postage rates, the office staff, you know, or the office staff gets a raise as well. The amount does not include the cost of operations to process payments and managed returned mail. So statement cost on the average practice is tens of thousands of dollars per year. And then when the patients don't pay, many practices finally place the unpaid balance with a collection agency, or they just write it off to bad debt. The latter is I've seen more and more, and it just seems to disappear, and then the patient even tries to come back. But there's certain collection agencies that it's interesting because they charge 50% of whatever's left or sometimes higher. And so what are you really getting? Another interesting fact from these surveys, more than 11% of all patient debt is written off, and practices wrote off an estimated $65 billion in bad debt during 1 year, and that was in 2013. Practices place over $1.6 billion with collection agencies during 1 year. And compared with other markets, medical practices place the second largest dollar amount with collections just behind hospitals. And so the value amount collected decreases with time. So $18.40 is collected on the average against $100 of patient debt by a collection agency. That's pretty awful. So, I mean, that's with accounts ranging in about the $217 range. So what can your practice do to improve this? Because I really want you to get your recovery of this patient money up to between 65 and 70%, especially between those accounts that you don't want them to get to that 120 day old mark. Otherwise, that's going to be a problem for you to try and collect. So 60 to 90 days old, this is really where kind of the sweet spot is to even place in collections because you can usually still find the patient. And I know this is a tough topic for a lot of people. They don't want to put their patient in collection. They feel it'll be a problem. But if the patient has such, you know, disregard for your bill, you have to treat it as a business. We are in the business of medicine. We're trying to take our, you know, our practices to the next level. And that's what I try to do for you every week. But you have to understand that there is a share of cost that the patient has to absorb. They have to absorb some of that. I actually was having a social media argument with somebody today saying that, you know, access to patients for healthcare is just not there. Well, I understand that access in some capacity may not be there, but some people confuse access with ability to pay. You have access to healthcare. You can walk in anywhere, but they're going to say, what's your insurance? What is your ability to pay? You know, can you qualify for a indigent service? And so this is where I think sometimes, especially in our country, people miss sometimes that there needs to be a share of cost where you can also collect that balance from the patient. It's not just about what you get from the insurance company. You know, if our economy is so strong as we keep seeing on the news, then there is that population of patients that need to pay their bill. Not because, and a lot of patients just don't want to pay it. So let's keep that in mind as well. But also many practices are really set in their ways when it comes to handling patient accounts. And so based on statistics that I just mentioned, most cases have only downgraded over time and they're really not improved. And so we really want to challenge you to really upgrade your policies. And so really look at some of these and they're adoptable options, policies and techniques and scripts that can be used by most any practice to improve your patient collections. So the first one is include a financial policies pamphlet. It's in your welcome pamphlet to a patient. So every practice needs a financial policy, and that can be presented to the patient in a pleasing, non-aggressive manner, but it should be clear. It should be printed in a welcoming layout, and this will encourage your patient to read it. But it basically, when the patient comes to the window, signs the documents they don't read and walk away, how can you expect them to adhere to some of the practice policies if they're not really aware of them? And so start by creating an easy to read welcome pamphlet and also put in there a set of office policies. If you have a patient portal, that address, office hours, holidays, contact numbers for anybody they need in the office, and really also include some of the services that your practice delivers. And so we want to make sure that some of the pamphlet information, okay, this is what I would want to see in your pamphlet if I was a practice manager. So payment due at the time of service policy, meaning either through health insurance or their copay, their share of cost, or out of pocket. Various methods of making payments, so credit card, online patient portal, various payment plans. Explanation of credit card on file, that's called the CCF, and how the office will apply that capability, such as predefined not to exceed monthly amounts in a separate agreement the patient must sign. Your payment plan policy and how the CCF will be used to automate monthly payments. Budget payment plan policies with well-defined conditions. And be specific and clear, no ambiguity here. a financial hardship policy, and be very specific and clear there, since the federal government is clear when it comes to what they're what they feel is destitute or the financial hardship plan that they will allow under the Stark Law. And then that also goes into not just that, but is it under, will it be okay to do that under certain plans? And then what is your no-show policy? Definition of your elective and self-pay procedures and related policy that explains 100% of charges must be paid in advance or at the time of service. And then prompt pay incentives policy. So how you deliver this welcome pamphlet is important as what you say in it. And so define your office procedures and potentially a script for your front office staff to also follow with new patients. So as an example, your office procedure could state that at the time of check-in for a new patient, the reception is to open the pamphlet and walk the patient through the specific sections of the pamphlet, specifically discussing key financial policies and asking the patient periodically if they understand. Essentially, your front office staff is going to be responsible, unless you have a liaison, to educate your patient on your financial policies, and then what the expectations are, and they're set at the beginning of the patient relationship regarding patients and due and payment options. And so once financial policies are really defined, they must be enforced. So physicians must be a part of that enforcement effort. We don't want to bring the physician necessarily into the financial topic discussion during the visit, but the physician must be prepared, must be trained on their response should the patient bring up the topic. We all know cases where the physician during the visit will tell the patient, you know, don't worry about it, or you don't have to pay a copay. And that really kind of defeats the good work that goes into creating these policies. It also makes the patient think that they've got a personal relationship now with the physician, and it really undermines what the staff can do when it comes to collecting that money. So the hard part is a financially successful practice must be willing to refuse elective service to patients who don't abide by the policies. You have to discharge them from the practice who are not compliant with these outstanding balance policies. And, you know, you can offer to schedule a new patient appointment if the patient is not able to make their agreed upon balance payment at the time of the visit. But if it's not emergent, then you have that option and make sure you adhere to the rules of your state. The next is a guarantor's agreement. So this is a legal document that guarantees payment from the guarantor. So medical practices often hand a patient an agreement like financial policies, but it's been copied so many times it's illegible. And then worse, the practice has failed to include critical information that protects the practice or even update the form. So I see that quite a bit. So you really want to make sure you're looking at that and getting a current form. And review your guarantor's agreement for completeness of coverage. So guarantee of payment and assignment of benefits, reiterates your acceptance of your financial policy, collection and attorney fees if that's necessary, default action including credit reporting, and then no-show policies, and then obviously your credit card on file authorization. Do not make this mistake that it's not readable for your patient. Make sure it is in large font, and your pamphlet does not replace the guarantor agreement. The pamphlet is for their reading. The guarantor agreement is for their signature. And then prepare the day before the visit. You know, so you've heard the old saying, prior planning prevents poor performance. Proper preparation for the next day's visit can help a lower performing practice leap up a level or two. So modern practice automation software can go a long way in enabling your practice to apply a set of helpful best practices that will really improve your reimbursement cycles and reduce claim rejections or denials. So first step, know which patients pass their insurance verification. A failed result could mean a range of things, from change of address, or they, you know, or change of name. Maybe they had a change of marriage they didn't communicate yet to an insurer, or job loss. But make sure that the patient still has valid coverage. And then also make sure that you're printing out things for the patient, and so that when you take care of their patient, their payment right now, you make sure that you're also giving them any kind of receipt or information. Effective check-in procedures for patients. So as the patient is checking in, your practice automation software should be able to show each patient outstanding balance. An example, I know that you can with some softwares, is that you can see each scheduled patient's outstanding balance and copay by clicking on each patient from within the appointment scheduler and looking at, usually it's in the right-hand corner of the appointment screen, and you can see what they owe. That's a ledger field. I mean, they even have this now if you're going to the gym. I know my daughter's working part-time at the gym while she's in college, and she says as soon as they put their fingerprint in, we can see if they owe or if they're current on their account. So you should have something that's very similar to that. And then offer patients a range of payment options. So a modern practice today should support payment by cash, check, credit or debit card, phone payments by secured credit card, online patient portal payments, and then patient payment plans. So there should be a wide range of considerations for payments. Consider this statistic. An estimated 41% of patients pay by credit card at the time of service. So if you have not started taking credit cards, then you're really losing out on some of that reimbursement. And I always hear somebody say, well, the credit card is so expensive, saying that, you know, we don't want to do it because it's got 1 or 2% that, or even up to 4% that they charge us. Based on the fact that patients, I mean, we're talking 41% pay up front, I think what you're going to see is you're going to see that outweighs any non-collection of payment. And so that's really something you want to really take a look at as far as making sure that you have that option. And then make sure payment plans are patient friendly. So the ability to offer payment plans is yet another avenue for improving patient payments. I've gone to many offices and seen sticky notes everywhere reminding the staff person about this or that payment plan. This is not effective, or a method for managing payment plans for a growing practice. So any good payment plan system and practice management system should enable your staff to set up an automated payment plan so that the system does most of the work for you. Everything's very automated nowadays, so you should be able to do that. If the practice chooses to offer payment plans, it should be clearly defined in the practice welcome pamphlet along with other key financial policies. So when does the patient qualify, such as only accounts over or greater than $100, no more than 3 payments, and then we also require a credit card on file for all payment plans, something like that. So just make sure that you're aware that that has to be something that is approved and that you give them how that works. It's not basically, well, we'll put you on a payment plan, so we'll bill you every month and pay whatever you want. That's not a payment plan. That's giving the patient now an option to pay you, and you don't want to do that. And then the value of the credit card on file. So many practices still have not heard about this technique, but the results from practices that I have worked with, it's been highly effective. Now, it was hard for me to even jump on board with this, only because of the issue about privacy breach, and you know, there's a lot of identity theft. We got to be careful. But in today's environment of high deductibles leading to high patient portions per encounter, every practice should immediately institute this method to protect their financial health. So the technology is called Credit Card on File, CCF. When coupled with a patient payment plan, the practice gains an automated method for collecting a credit card payment against an outstanding balance every month. And the beauty of this approach is that the practice does not have to call the patient or send them a statement. It just is automatic. And so here's a policy example for credit card on file policy. Our practice is dedicated to keeping the high cost of healthcare as low as possible. In order to keep our operating costs down, we ask that you pay your visit in full at the time of service. If you have insurance, that will cover a portion of your service. We require our patient to sign a credit card on file agreement, authorizing this practice to debit your card for an amount not to exceed $100 after the insurance is paid. How might this operate in the real world of practice? Well, if you're using something like OpenEdge or NextGen or anything like that, the billing process starts by running the billing. It's called a billing wizard type thing. But the system returns a list of all outstanding balances that have a credit card on file amount and then what can be applied against that balance. And it's really easy to process. So make sure you know what your software is so that you can actually make that happen. But this is a great new thing that comes into a lot of billing softwares and practice management softwares that can help you and assist you in this situation. Now, one of the things that I noticed that in practices is, you know, sometimes I lurk. A practice will say, we need you to come in and train our physicians on documentation. And then can you also talk to our billing and coding office because we have some problems there. But where I find that some of the main issues are really at the front desk. And this is not to say that, you know, I don't love the front desk people. They have a tough job too. They're the first, you know, eye of the practice. And so we want to make sure they're the first impression. And we want to make sure that they understand and don't have anxiety when asking for money from the patient. Because if not handled properly, this step can create an awkward moment for both the staff and the patient. And with this practice and with practice, asking for payment becomes so much easier. So here are some tips, maybe even a couple of scripts that will make it a lot more comfortable for your staff and patients. So work with your front office people to modify and follow certain scripts and then encourage them to memorize their scripts. The goal is to keep the communication respectful, personal, private, and professional. So the wrong way. I will start with the negative and then end with the positive. I know you have been in a doctor's office and heard the receptionist yell across the waiting room, "Miss Jones, there's a $20 copay and a $50 balance on your account." No, 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 no. That will likely embarrass the patient and perhaps upset them. Remember, every patient balance that goes out to collections is typically only worth about $18.40 out of every 100. So collection agencies rarely have a great recovery rate. So your goal, therefore, is to protect the financial viability of the practice, but also make not only your office staff comfortable, but the patient comfortable. So here's the right way. Keep the conversation personal and private. Have the staff call the patient to the window. Show them the charge ticket, which has their balance on it, and quietly discuss the patient or the balance with them. If you want to create a sense of urgency and importance in paying that bill, reiterate that the practice does not carry balances and that the payment is due at the time of service. They should maintain good eye contact with the patient during their quest. This lets them know that that you're serious, and then follow your predefined patient protocols and payment options, all of which it should be stated in your financial policy in your welcome to the practice pamphlet. And then they really want to practice this. So here's some avoid open-ended questions. So here's one. "Mrs. Jones, you have a $50 balance. Can you pay that today?" What if she says no? She wants to pay her cable bill instead. So instead, state it like this. "Mrs. Jones, your balance is $50 today. Will that be cash or charge today?" There's a difference. There's not a yes or no option. And then be prepared to handle objections. So when you assume there will be a payment is how you ask the question. You have to introduce a bit of urgency in the statement. So be prepared to handle objections. So they may say, "My insurance should pay all of that bill," or "Let me call my insurance to pay that bill." Have your front office staff make a list of the most common objections and together craft responses for this, and then be prepared to coach them. Here's a couple of scripts I've come up with, and hopefully you'll find this helpful. And you want to make sure there's no surprises when the patient gets to the office and is asked to pay the visit in full or by their agreement for the credit card on file. So basically, here's one. "So thank you for choosing our practice regarding our financial policy, Mrs. Fox. It is our goal to keep healthcare costs low, a goal that I'm sure you share. In order to do this, we request that patients pay for services at the time they are rendered. If you have insurance that will cover a portion of the service, we ask that you sign our credit card on file agreement so that any balance after insurance can be paid and we avoid the costly expense of sending you payments and not have to worry about it. We really appreciate that." And then how to ask for a balance payment during appointment confirmation. "So Mrs. Garcia, you may not be aware, but there's a small balance of $29 on your account. We maybe save you time and go ahead and process that with payment now with a credit card." Okay, so that way if they're confirming the appointment. And this is something that I think is lost in some practices. When they confirm appointments, look to see if there's a balance. I always see practices that are calling patients to make sure they have appointments, but they never check their balance. And that's something that would save you so much time and they could actually process it now. How to ask a patient for a past due balance payment at the window. "Hi, Mrs. Jones, you may not be aware, but there's a balance of $56 on your account. Would you like that put on a credit card or there's an account balance of $73 remaining, Mr. Smith. Can we put that on your credit card on file or would you rather pay by cash or check?" So make sure that you're giving them an option of how to pay, not a yes or no question. And so that right then they know that they're going to need to have to pay something. You just want to make it where, payment is necessary from not only the insurance company, but also the patient. And hopefully I've shown you that priority there. Where it gets a little bit crazy, and I was actually going to deal with this on a webinar recently, is when you have a practice that doesn't see patients very often. So for example, radiology, collecting payments in a timely manner for radiology is critical because their relationship with the patient is really episodic. It's not long-term, and radiology businesses and offices often had limited patient contact for information. And so that creates kind of a gap there. But for those of you that have practices that see the patient ongoing, this is a relationship that you want to forge. And so you really have to make sure that you do it right the first time and that there are no surprises. So hopefully, I've been building you up for this topic. Hopefully that helped you. Hopefully some of the scripts were something that you can get behind and understand. Now I want to get into, because this is our last part of this where we get into the coding. I give you a coding question, the last part of the day. Sorry about that. I just flipped over my page here. So before I do that, though, I want to end with our final sponsor today, and that would be AdvancedMD, spotlighting telemedicine as a solution that's proven to boost patient engagement and bring in new revenue streams for your practice. AdvancedMD.com. Okay, so I had an interesting question, and this is one that I haven't had before, and so I really had to do some research on it. So there's something called physician-assisted suicide. I'm not trying to be negative, you guys. Just follow me here. So what this is it's called PAS. This requires a patient to self-administer, but the physician can order, knowing the intent. And there's a few states that are allowing it. There's actually 7 states: Oregon, Washington, Montana, Vermont, Colorado, California, and Washington D.C. So what this is not to be confused with euthanasia, where the physician administers the lethal dose. This is where the patient has found out that they have a terminal condition, and there's a possibility or most likely a demise within the next 6 months or less. And there's more information on that, but I just want to let you know this is a coding question I received. So what happens when a patient who has established PAS with the physician is admitted to the hospital with a condition that results in a failed suicide attempt? So this was an actual case that occurred at a California hospital. The patient was found by the housekeeper, who was not aware of the PAS. The emergency medical services were called. The patient was found to be suffering a cardiac arrest, was resuscitated, and admitted to the acute care hospital. What is the principal diagnosis code? That's my coding question for the patient in the acute care setting. Some would say that the patient suffered a poisoning from the self-administered PAS medication. On the other hand, the medication was prescribed by the patient's physician. So would the principal diagnosis be an adverse effect of the PAS drug, in which case the cardiac arrest would be sequenced first? Or still another consideration would be the patient's end-of-life condition as the principal diagnosis code, since this is the underlying reason for the prescribed PAS drug. So tons of possibilities were floated, not only with the coding clinic, but also for California Health Information Association and their coding committee. And the overall consensus was to use the adverse effect sequencing. And so because that was an injury too, that's the T code section, we came up with T88.7, and then we have 2 placeholder XX and then A for the initial encounter. So this was definitely a challenging one for me because I've never seen that before, but if you're doing any research on that, you might definitely want to Google it and figure out what's going on there, if you're in one of those states or if it's something that has ever come up in your practice. But that was one I know a little bit outside the box, but I wanted to bring that to your attention because it was just something that floored me when I got the question. So we're going to go ahead and finish up in close for today. A couple of things I just wanted to mention. Make sure that if you are listening and you enjoy our podcast and you're liking what we're talking about, please go to your platform that you listen to it, whether it be iTunes or Stitcher Radio or TuneIn or YouTube or any of those. And even if you're loading it off my website, make sure you rate us and give us a good recommendation. Oh, see, there I am plugging it. And give us a recommendation, or not a recommendation, but a good, nice rating, a nice review. We really appreciate that. Also, if you go to podcastawards.com, you can actually now put in a nomination for, we have several of them for our podcast. We actually been nominated for a People's Choice Award. So if you're interested in doing that, again, podcastawards.com. And we really appreciate that. We'd love to be able to say award-winning CodeCast podcast in the the health and medical coding industry. So we're already, if you've heard me say it before, we're on the top of the charts for how we get downloads. So we're really excited about that. And I've gotten such great feedback from everybody. So we're really happy about that. So again, we're going to go ahead and close out for today, but we really hope you make it a great day. And we'll talk to you again on the next CodeCast podcast.
For more information on medical coding, billing, auditing, and compliance, including how to hire Terry, follow Terry on Twitter at TerryCoder1 or visit her website at www.terryfletcher.net. Podcast producer Joe Kuzma. Music producer DeSassin Music.